Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. This is the Mail Report for May 2011 for the comics, so we'll be talking about the top 300 comics as sold through Diamond to retailers for the month, and I'm just going to put it out there that this is really, it was not a good month for comics. This was one of the lowest totals for the top 300 that we've had. You know, really, in the Final Order era, this was the third lowest. And it's, I think in this episode, we're going to be doing a lot of talking about kind of forest and trees, how sometimes the forest is looking good, although in this case it really was not, and how the trees are just dying off. Because if you look at the chart of the total for the top 300, definitely you see some peaks and valleys and stuff. But normally you don't see anything, with a couple of exceptions, where you're thinking, oh my god, things have just fallen off the cliff. January of this year was certainly one of those times. You know, there was January a couple of years back where we had some similar issues. And it's one of those things that typically what happens, and this is a month where it's very clear because it did not happen. But typically what happens is you'll have an event series come in and just do gangbusters at the top of the list, or you'll have enough things at the top with strong sales to kind of mask the fact that a lot of titles are continuing a slide down the rankings and corresponding slide down in sales usually, or certainly usually, let me rephrase, they have the slide down in sales, which usually corresponds to a slide down in the rankings, to kind of counterbalance or whatever. But this was a case in which, I mean, the breakdown, really not too surprising. Marvel on top. It's on top like 95-96% of the time. Okay. This time they had 49.74% of the units, 51.81% of the dollars, so right there around half. Again, not uncommon at all. DC Comics came in with 29.3% of the units, 26.82% of the dollars. Again, right around that 30% of the units and stuff, not too uncommon. Marvel had 96 items on the list, 3 were reorder. DC had 68 items, 2 were reorder. Again, that kind of volume of items, not that uncommon. And then everybody else is kind of fighting for the remaining you know, percentage points and stuff, the remaining, in this case, 21% of the sales, with the majority of that going to kind of the other big dogs, Image, IDW, Dark Horse, always in this area, Boom and Dynamite usually are. This time, actually, Zenoscope squeaked by with over a percentage point of the units, so I kind of put them in that middle category this time. It's really kind of easy to categorize these publishers sometimes by taking either the number of digits in the number of units or just kind of the grouping number of digits in the percentage points for the units and grouping them that way. But those couple of publishers account for another 18.61% of the unit sales for the top 300, leaving only 2.35% of the unit sales for the top 300 to everybody else that could fit into that top 300. This kind of thing, really, very, very common, this kind of a breakdown. You agree with that?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that was interesting to me, and I am not surprised that, I mean, DC, they got to be sitting around looking at these numbers. And, you know, when Flashpoint number one comes in below Fear Itself number two, you're just looking and saying, you don't have people who are shopping in the comic shops energized and excited about DC. I don't know any other way to look at it. Maybe you have a thought on that statement.
Well, let's quickly run through the top five comics, and then let me tell you what they all have in common. although it probably should be obvious. Fear itself, number two, top item, 96,318 estimated units. Flashpoint, number one, 86,981 units, so about a 10,000 unit gap, little under. Again, both of those under 100,000. Third rank, Green Lantern 66, 75,371 estimated units. Followed by Avengers 13 at 68,086 units. And then Fantastic Four number 3 with 66,885.
Or FF, as they prefer to call it.
That is the more accurate title. I just naturally, you know, translate.
Because we've been calling Fantastic Four FF for 30 years, so.
And this is more correctly the Future Foundation, but officially it's just FF, which, if that's not the sign of they're going to rename the title within a year, nothing else is. Two events going on, Marvel and DC each having one. Fear itself, Flashpoint. Flashpoint just starting up. It started 86,981 units. Not a good sign, okay? The fact it's only 10,000 or so units behind Fear itself, that's at least putting it on par. The fact that a line-wide Marvel event that touches every major character, and hell, they're bringing ones out of the woodwork for this, that with its second issue drop below 100,000, really a bad sign. What I'm taking from this is I'm really expecting to hear, particularly if Fear itself continues this way, Marvel's going to do the, well, you know, it's time to put these events away, let them kind of cool off for a while, and focus on the excellence on the individual title level kind of a spin on it. In other words, you know, they're going to change their focus, not because these things are failing, but because it's the right thing to do. DC, of course, has already announced they're relaunching their entire superhero universe. I think what killed Flashpoint's momentum out of the gate is the way it was solicited. I mean, we were talking about it on this episode a couple of months ago, before I'd even seen the previews. You were already complaining about, gee, there's too many titles, they're putting on all at once, and valid complaints. I think a lot of people saw that and said, hey, too much, maybe I'll get the main one, maybe I won't, but I'm not going to go whole hog. I think next month, with the June numbers, when we see them, we're going to see those up and down the list. We're going to see Flashpoint up near the top. We're going to see probably that Aquaman and Wonder Woman stuff up there. We're going to see a couple others way down at the bottom, possibly in the 10,000 or under range. You know, I consider Mike Carlin a friend. I talk with him almost every year at San Diego. But that Canterbury Cricket one-shot he's doing, it doesn't matter how great his writing may or may not be on that. You know, I like his writing. I think it's going to be good stuff. But the way it was solicited, if that goes above 20,000, I'll be shocked. It was put out there as a, yeah, well, we're publishing it. So they're really shooting themselves in the foot over there at DC. But, I mean, look at this. The only ongoing title we have above 70,000 is Green Lantern. We only had 5 issues this month above 61,000. Only 3 of them are ongoing. That's a really, really bad sign. You know, the 30-29% drop on Fear itself isn't good, but the fact that nothing is able to sustain sales, this goes towards that forest and trees. Normally, we'd have all these other trees, you know, slowly dying off or whatever, but the forest would seem to be stable or expanding because a Fear itself, or more accurately, something like a Civil War or something, would come in gangbusters and have lifted the aggregate sales, you know, by, you know, a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah, generally event titles are selling way better at the top of the list and kind of just buoying up the perceptions, like you say, that kind of hide how relatively poorly everything else is doing.
Yeah. Well, in my CBR article this month, I did chart the different events, and over at Marvel, I mean, Civil War was doing, you know, for the first couple of issues, well over 300,000. It was doing more like 325, closing in on 350,000. The second half of the series cooled off a bit, but was still solidly above the quarter million mark. And I love being able to use the million in any sense with these sales. Both Secret Invasion and House of M started above the quarter million mark, but dropped below the 200,000 mark with the second issue. but still stayed, you know, in the case of Secret Invasion, above 150,000 throughout the run. With House of M, it ducked below there around issue 4, but still stayed around the 125-plus mark throughout the run. Now, I went ahead and charted Siege, although I consider that an incident, not a true event, because it really didn't expand beyond the Avenger franchise. But even that stayed well above the 100,000 mark the entire time. So for this to have dropped with Fear Itself fairly sharply, fairly quickly, although it was not as sharp of a drop as we saw on either Secret Invasion or House of M, it's still below that 100,000 mark. That's not good. And again, just a quantum difference in sales. Some of these
and you look at where Fear Itself Spider-Man's debuting, you know, because then you got those tie-in series. And probably, I mean, Spider-Man does... I'm looking for it here.
Amazing Spider-Man is doing up in the 58,000, 59,000.
Yeah, I kind of scrolled down.
On average, it's doing 57,740. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's doing like, you know, a little more than, but I mean, Fear Itself Spider-Man debuts at about 34,551 approximate units. And that's a little more than 50% of what Spider-Man does. It's, you know, like about a third of what the Fear Itself series is doing. I mean, you're not pulling Fear Itself fans into this book. You're not pulling Spider-Man fans into this book. And Spider-Man is the most, you know, other than like X-Men, I mean, that's the big gun for Marvel.
Actually, the Avengers stuff seems to be the strongest franchise for them. Right now, FF is temporarily up there at the top of the charts, but that's more an anomaly. But yeah, Fantastic or Amazing Spider-Man, I mean, as a solo title, usually for solo feature or solo character feature, but you know what I mean.
I'm going with, like, of the books that they've decided to do spin-offs, because I don't think there's a Fear Itself Avengers spin-off. They just have the Fear Itself banner, and they're crossing the story over into the regular issues of the Avengers.
Fair enough. But, I mean, these side titles, I mean, are just doing pretty badly in and of themselves. I mean... Fear Itself Homefront is down at rank 53 with 28,605. I mean, the problem isn't event burnout or anything of the sort. It's event saturation. Because we have so many Fear Itself, miniseries coming out as to be ludicrous. You know, we've got further down the Youth in Revolt number 1 down at rank 68, 24,709. The others hadn't come out in May. I think most of them are kicking out in June. But we're going to see a lot of these other side series not only starting low, but dropping. I mean, the 12.26% drop on that Homefront second issue really is not that bad. But it's one of those things, if these titles continue to drop, particularly Fear Itself, the lead one, I think we're going to see Marvel backing off on these line-wide events. Now, I expect DC to back off on these line-wide events just for the first year or so as they establish all of these titles. I worry, though, when we have only a handful of titles, you know, doing above 61,000. We only had another four above 60,000 itself. So, I mean, at this point, we had Amazing Spider-Man 661 coming in at the bottom of the top 10. With 59,078 estimated units. And there were months, okay, there was a month, that wouldn't have even placed in the top 40. So what we're seeing is a definite softening of sales, both at the top of the list, but just across the board. And I think this is one of the main reasons DC is revamping their lineup. I think it's not a matter of, oh, they have to, but finally they've kind of woken up, they've gotten a game plan together. You know, their head honchos, Dan DiDio, Jim Lee, and Jeff Johns, I got to imagine we're sitting around a coffee table at some point thinking, you know, hey, we got to shake things up. We got to get people excited again. How can we do that? Let's retool everything. Let's renumber everything. Let's restart everything. Let's give people a new jumping on point. And if they're smart, they keep it accessible. They keep it energetic. They keep people excited about it. And, I mean, maybe that'll work for them. But their average sales on titles these days is around the 30,000 mark. That's not viable for an average. I mean, certainly there are some above, some below. But they need to get past this core audience. Because this downward trend is getting to the point where it is not just not viable, it frankly, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, we're having Marvel and DC properties. Core properties, maybe not Superman Batman level core, but below 10,000 units. Freedom Fighters, Power Man and Iron Fist, Doom Patrol, Thunder Agents. You know, the fact that, again, we've got a Marvel one down here is a little surprising. They tend to cut the cord faster, but five-issue miniseries, you kind of got to let it play out. The fact that Sigil dropped below 10,000 with its third issue, I'm questioning how many things beyond, I guess it's Mystic that's next that we're going to see. And then, of course, Rebels right there at that 10,000 estimated units mark is kind of, you know, indicative of why that wasn't one of the ones to get relaunched.
I'm scrolling down here. Where is Ruse at? So Ruse is at 10,749, so it held a little better, 1,000 more units than Sigil. It's just people are not uptaking the cross-gen stuff.
Well, and to a degree, why should they? It's just another couple of Marvel titles that aren't really Marvel titles. They're really, I think, targeted for people who used to be fans of cross-gen.
Which, again, I have a opinion there that I'm mystified why if they're targeting fans who used to be at cross-gen, why they would completely retool a concept. Like, you know, Mystic, they're almost bragging about the fact that it's got nothing whatsoever to do with the previous title except the title.
That does boggle the mind.
You know, so how exactly are they playing to that demographic? I mean, at least Ruse, you know, it fairly carries on. I mean, it's a good new start, but, you know, it's the same title. But I can't say that for Sigil. I can't say that for Mystic, at least for all intents and purposes, from the way they've been marketing Mystic.
So. Yeah. It's kind of like the Valiant 2.0, you know, relaunch or whatever they did. Back when Acclaim took it over or whatever. It was the same names, revamps of the titles. It's as if they're doing a Golden Age, Silver Age kind of conversion on these properties. That worked back then. It's harder to do now. Frankly, though, you know, you look at where Sigil is, you look at where Ruse is. Ruse, like you said, is a fairly seamless continuation. It's got Mark Waid writing it as he did before. Sure, there's a different artist, but you look at Sigil, which again is a very different take on the property than the original one, and they're not selling those two titles now that differently from each other. So you can't say if they'd stayed true to the original material, it would have sold better, or if you revamped it, it would sell.
I agree with you 100% on that, because it's, you know, it's like 1,000 more, but that's kind of like in the noise. I mean, probably more accounted for by just Mark Waid's name than, you know, anything else. It just doesn't seem like there's a general interest in the stuff.
Yeah, I would. But, I mean, you could argue there's just not a general interest in comics based on these sales.
Well, yeah, I think what you've got is the people who go to comic shops like a certain thing. And when you stray off of that path, you know, like a Marvel fan, you know, not wanting to pick on, you know, I like Marvel, right? Also, you know, I like Marvel. But your average person that goes into the comic shop to buy Marvel comics, they're not interested in cross-gen books. They're not interested in DC books. They're not interested. They're interested in Avengers and, you know, Thor and, you know, the big heroes. And when you stray too far away from, you know, kind of like a really strong core path of Marvel stuff, even those people who are going into the comic shop seem to lose interest really quick.
I don't know if I would agree with that. If you look at ranks 137 and 138, we've got Unwritten number 25 at 11,137. We've got Hawkeye Blind Spot number 4, who's an Avenger, at 11,126. And if the superhero genre was so strong, if those key heroes were so popular, he shouldn't be selling beneath, you know, a Vertigo title.
I don't know that I agree with that, though. I mean, it's like there's a difference. Just because someone is an Avenger doesn't make it Avengers. I mean, there's a difference, I think, between people who are going to buy Avengers and New Avengers and people who are going to buy any miniseries that they slap Hawkeye into.
I agree with that, but my point is you can't just say that the people going into the comic shops want just this one certain thing. because while there obviously is more popular titles than others, and there are a couple like Avengers that are at the top of the list, and I'm not trying to equate that Hawkeye should be selling at the top of the list. It certainly shouldn't be. However, we've got enough things down here at the bottom of the... in this area where we're seeing, you know, Namor, we're seeing Hawkeye, we're seeing, again, Rebels, you know, Captain America, Hail Hydra, Thunder Agents. We're seeing Wolverine, Hercules down in this area, you know, in the same range of sales. We're seeing the BPRD, we're seeing Unwritten, we're seeing iZombie, Hellraiser, Jonah Hex. To me, that means it's not a matter of there are some genres or some properties that are just inherently less popular with the comic book shop readers as a group, so much as it's hard to keep their attention at all.
Well, I think you have different groups, though.
Oh, totally. You know, I'm not trying to say buying, it's one type of person.
People who are buying iZombie and Unwritten, and you know, that's a subgenre of comic fans. For, I mean, and it, none of these statements, by the way, are absolutes. I mean, there are going to be people that cross over between, you know, the different things. You know, we're certainly examples of that. There are lots of other people who are too. But by and large, when you look at the sales, when I go to the comic shop every Wednesday, and I'm standing there, and there's usually a big line of people, and these are people that come in for their fix on Wednesday, and most of those people are holding a big stack of the big Marvel books. And then there are people who are holding some Marvel books mixed in with their big stack of the big DC books. Then there are some people who get, you know, very fewer people who get a mixture of both. And then there's, you know, your people who come in. You don't see a lot of them necessarily right there at Wednesday, you know, that are getting their Vertigo books, unless they're getting those along with other things. But people who are just getting those are not necessarily the guys that are there at lunchtime on Wednesday. You know, it's just,
well, but
those hardcore fans are like mostly Marvel.
Oh, and I get that, but part of what's going to skew that is if you had somebody who was equally interested in the mainstream Marvel stuff and the Vertigo titles, there's a hell of a lot more of that mainstream Marvel stuff, so it's going to look like they're predisposed to that, just because there aren't as many Vertigo titles available to be bought that week. I think what gets me is the fact that we're seeing in this, you know, 10,000-ish sales range, a very interesting mix of mainstream Marvel DC characters, some of these cross-gen stuff, a lot of Vertigo things, some Image stuff, and it's not as clear-cut where you could just kind of stratify the list saying, well, if it's superhero, it's gonna be up here. If it's, you know, Vertigo, it's gonna be right here. If it's indie, it's gonna be over in this area. It's, we're getting a bit of a mix, and part of this is just, again, oversaturation. We've got so many Wolverine titles out and stuff that this Wolverine Hercules one probably just got lost in the mix. And again, it's selling below a couple of Vertigo titles.
Well, then you get to the point where you're just tapping out people's wallets.
Yes.
You know, there's only so much that even someone who has a predilection to buy this stuff, you know, how much of this stuff can they afford to buy, you know?
Well, what's funny is if you average the sales for the top 300, you get 17,143. And that would have placed at about rank 105. So by definition, most comics are selling below average on this list, you know? And that average is just a little below where, say, Power Girl is. And this is the kind of thing that I think it's smart for DC to be taking some major risks at this point and kind of shaking stuff up. Whether that'll work out for them is another matter entirely. 50-50 as to whether it will. Either it does or it doesn't. But it's getting to where every month that they would have put that decision off, they would have had less and less to lose. Just because of how we're seeing the attrition on the sales. But, you know, to me, the big problem is I've got a column here of what's the delta, how much did it increase or decrease from the previous issue, and then the percentage of it. And if it's a negative number, it's in red. And most of these numbers are in red. You know, it's very, very common for things to drop from issue to issue, in some cases drastically. Again, it was a 29% drop on Fear itself. And the fact that neither event could sustain over 100,000 or break 100,000 with Flashpoint's case so far, not a good sign. Those were one of the things that were propping up sales. Everything in the top 10 had multiple item codes indicative of variant covers, alternate covers, incentive covers. Mm-hmm. And even Amazing Spider-Man failed to break 60,000 by a wide margin. It's, again, just a little over 59,000. So the techniques they're using of multiple covers, of events, of, frankly, even the renumberings aren't working. Rank 23, we've got Moon Knight number 1. It did 49,018 units. I expect that to drop heavily on the next issue.
Well, here's something that, on Spider-Man. So Spider-Man for a long time was 3 times a month. Now, when it was 3 times a month, was it mostly $2.99 an issue unless it was an extra-sized issue?
They averaged $3.99 a month. What they've been doing lately is putting in backup features, which is accounting for the $3.99 price point.
Yeah. I mean, because I read Spider-Man almost top of the stack, and I have found the backup feature to be completely worthless for the last couple of months. I mean, it's been really weak for the most part. I mean, there have been some that have been okay. I don't know what your thought on it is, but you know, kind of getting tapped for 2 times a month for $3.99. Maybe people are just getting sick of it.
Well, I think it's partially that. I think part of it is just, you know, kind of the standard attrition. If the title's not able to keep its readers from issue to issue and it slowly bleeds them off over time, it's going to keep going down. Raising the price doesn't help. Having so-so backup features certainly doesn't help. But getting people excited about the thing and really having each issue sell that next issue is where you've got to be. And I don't think most of these titles are even close to that point. You know, Mighty Thor, we talked about the first issue on the Weekly Comics Spotlight. Both of us were kind of a, wow, that was a very interesting way to launch that title. Not in a very positive direction either. And here we've got the number 2 issue, rank 22, 50,473 estimated units. It's down 83.5%.
So we weren't the only ones with that unique opinion.
No, not at all. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of, again, with Fear itself, the 29%, this one with 38%, we're seeing a lot of very heavy second issue drops these days. And that's why I think October is going to be a very interesting month for DC. Because a lot of people may be doing what you're planning on doing, of getting those first issues, not necessarily getting those second. And stores may be very conservative in response. And go down to rank 103. We got the second issue of Herc here. It dropped over 55%. Now, we've also got issue 3 of Herc here, which sold better and actually was an increase of 7.88% over number 2 there. So it could be that retailers were a bit too conservative when they ordered that second issue. And then when it came time to order that third, which was in the next preview cycle, they realized there was a bit more interest, it was better than they expected, whatever, and adjusted their orders upwards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that having been said, it's still down by 20,000 units from the initial 38,774 units down to that third issue at 18,755 units. So, you know, still under half where it started.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of thing is par for the course these days. And I think those are the kinds of reasons why, like I said, DC is shaking things up. And look at rank 74. We got Booster Gold 44. This was part of Flashpoint. It went up 45.66% and still only sold 23,332 units. These sales are not good. You know, when I realized there was only 5 things over 61,000 units, I was quite surprised.
And I think, you know, kind of segueing to the digital part of DC's announcement, you know, that seems to be where I think their relaunch will succeed or fail. Because I'm very interested in DC's relaunch, right? It seems like you know, there's going to be, and we're going to be checking it all out. But I don't think that the comic shops and the people who go to comic shops, you know, are going to suddenly have some kind of epiphany and start buying tons of DC books that they weren't buying before just because all of a sudden they're number one issues and, you know, kind of relaunched. It might be a small percentage, but I don't think it's...
I think in September, for the first issue and only the first issue, we're going to see a huge spike. We could see DC gain easily 1 million units just from those number ones. Now, whether people stick with those, again, we're going to see, I think, what we saw with 1 year later. Huge spike, a bit of a drop-off, and then within 6 months, pretty much back to how it was.
Well, given the discounts and incentives and all this kind of stuff, I have no doubt that that's going to be the case. I'm not convinced that there's going to be necessarily sell-through on those at the retail level.
And we have no way of knowing.
We have no way of knowing, and certainly beyond that. My point, though, is for them to be successful in the long run, beyond those first issue or two, they, by necessity, need to be cultivating an audience that is different than the people who are currently going to comic shops. And trying to drive people into comic shops does not seem to be the way to go, which is why I'm encouraged, you know, if they're going digital on all this stuff, you know, it's just kind of like movies, right? You know, there are so many millions of people go to see movies that, you know, getting 1% of the movie audience would like be like a 50% increase in a book. I mean, you look at the number of people that have these digital devices, it eclipses the number of people that go to comic shops to buy these things. And if they, and you're not going to see it right now, you know, if they do some kind of marketing campaign that's targeted at those people, and you'll see it in the week or two before this happens, you know, so like second half of August is when you're going to see that marketing campaign. If that's successful, that could be the game changer. But again, that's not something we're ever going to see in these numbers, because when they start having digital sales, that's going to be closely held proprietary information, unless they're just releasing dribs and drabs of it with a real big marketing spin on it to, you know, try to grab some publicity.
Oh, we're going to see press releases out the wazoo on how something sold brilliantly digitally and stuff like that, but what they're not going to have for the most part is actual numbers.
Right, you're not going to see any actual objective numbers.
Yeah, but I think we are going to see signs of those sales in these numbers, because we're going to see things that are down at that below 10,000 unit that aren't getting canceled.
Right, exactly. You're going to be able to tell by what you don't see. You're going to see things that are selling 6,000 copies in the comic shop, and it's not getting canceled after issue 6. And that's going to tell you.
I think that's going to be unlikely to have happen, though. The reason for that is I think we're going to see sales trends-wise, if we were to see the actual sales numbers on the digital side, is something akin to how sales are on the trade side. We've got people waiting for the trade. Trade comes out, they still wait. This stuff comes out digitally. What's the incentive to order it before you're ready to read it? Nothing. Matter of fact, there's a disincentive. You're better off waiting, because they're going to drop the price from on par with the print version to a dollar less after 4 weeks or whatever it is. Okay? So if you're sitting there with your iPad, your Google tablet, whatever device of your choosing, and you're thinking, oh, wow, I want to read a comic, odds are that's when you're going to say, what do I want to read? Let me go buy it. Now, if by the time you figure that out, you still have time to read it, you'll actually buy it. Otherwise, you'll just say, hey, well, think about that for later. But you're not going to have the phenomenon we have in the print arena, where people go to the comic shop on that Wednesday, they buy 5, 10, 15, 20, 40, 50 comics to go read. You're going to go do that in dribs and drabs as you do it. Now, granted, that Justice League number one, that first issue there, that might continue to sell forever, but only as people are ready to read it. Now, that first issue's got to have enough hook to keep people interested, enough meat to justify the price they paid for it, and enough push into that next issue to get somebody to go get that, because they're not going to be necessarily in the habit of going to the equivalent of the comic shop every Wednesday. It's going to be they'll check back. And I think a lot of these non-comic fans aren't going to be in this monthly cycle of release. They're probably going to expect it more like a TV show or something weekly, or just not think about it at all, at which point getting that second sale is going to be a challenge. I don't think the digital business model has been cracked yet. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this will work out brilliantly for DC.
What they really need to do is come up with some kind of precursor this by saying what they really need to do is cut the comic shops loose and stop this model where they're doing unnatural sales model for the digital world because they're trying not to piss off the comic shops.
They can't do that.
Well, I'm not saying they can or can't do it. I'm just saying that they're not going to be able to really break away until they do that.
Well, you're suggesting they should do that. I'm going very strongly on the side they should not. If they were to do that, if they were to price these digital things at a rock-bottom price, 99 cents, 50 cents, whatever, cutting loose the comic shop, as you say. Am I understanding your point correctly?
No.
Okay, then what is your point?
My point is that they're not going to get huge penetration into the digital market until such a time as they go non-traditional. That does not necessarily just mean pricing it at 99 cents. What it could mean is offering some kind of a subscription model that is going to automatically, and you get a discount when you get a subscription. Just like if I go into that little coupon in a Marvel comic book and I get a subscription to the Marvel comics and I can get them for a dollar cheaper an issue by subscribing. You know, the same kind of thing where if you can get somebody locked into it where they're going to get it, you know, ping emails to their device so they get a notice when the new issue comes out. You need to have something that's going to be driving that demand and not just, you know, as you were talking about, well, whenever I get around to it, I might or I might not, you know, check these things out. You know, that's the real difference that's going to need to happen. Now, is a comic shop going to be happy if they offer a subscription, you know, that gives somebody a dollar off every issue? Probably not. And maybe they're not going to do that immediately. I'm just saying that in order to really, at the point that they want to really spike up their digital sales, they're going to need to do something other than making it be completely on the consumer to go look for it and pay full price on day and date.
I'm already getting emails from Comicology telling me what's available digitally every week. I'm assuming that's going to continue. I'm assuming that that kind of alert system is going to be out there. Now, whether people are going to sign up for that as they dabble in digital comics, don't know. I'm a hardcore comic fan. That's why I'm getting it. I think the $2.99, $3.99 price point is going to be enough of a barrier that getting people to sign up for a digital subscription, even at a dollar off, is going to be more of an investment in money than people are going to want to make. I mean, digital comics are going to be competing against Angry Birds that sells for what, 99 cents, $1.99, I don't know. But a minimal thing for hours and hours and hours of entertainment. If the comics don't have, I think the digital comics are going to really amp up the return on investment aspect of individual issues. If they don't have it, people aren't going to go for that next one. Okay, I don't think that the way to spike digital sales is to do that kind of subscription model. I think the way to spike digital sales, if they need to, is to basically do the packaged cost of, hey, I'm getting the physical copy for an additional quarter or whatever, I can get the digital one as well. That is the kind of thing that will drive adoption to the digital, at which point they're ready to move away from physical.
See, I disagree with that a lot, because all that's going to do is that's what's going to explicitly pirate the physical print people. And my allegation is that the people who are buying physical print comics are not the audience you want to be going after.
No, they're the advertising to the audience you want to be going after. If they could be getting somebody like me to say, wow, for a minimal cost, I could not only be getting the print stuff to maintain my collection and read how I'd like, but also get it digitally to where I could be, you know, having it in my bag at work or whatever and reading it at lunch. That would mean, one, I'd probably go grab a tablet device instantly to go get that. Two, I'd be having those comics at work, so if somebody says, hey, what should I read? I could say, well, you know, this right here, let me show you on my screen what you ought to be reading. You know, it would turn the hardcore comic fans into those raving fans that word-of-mouth grassroots advertising campaign that would get this potential digital market and digital audience that is pretty much unaware and not passionate about comics, interested, aware, and sold to. I'm not trying to suggest that those of us going into comic shops are the be-all, end-all of the digital market. I'm saying we could be used as a stepping stone to go grab that. We become the salespeople on the virtual floor, if you will. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think the $299, $399 price point is viable either necessarily in print, as these sales show, or digitally. So, you know, I think they need to rethink the business model, you know, because the sales they're going to have are going to be slower and longer term than is needed to sustain a monthly comic. So I think digital is going to be relegated to an additional sales channel, much like trades are, and is unlikely to ever become the dominant sales channel. And again, with sales like we're seeing here, they need to beef up the print sales. Going after digital is nice, but it's not going to cut it. Yeah, we'll see what we can see as the future goes on. Again, I've tried to get some of these digital sales figures from various places, have not had any luck. I'm going to continue to talk to various people, see what I can do. I might be able to swing getting an index ranking list similar to what we have here. So we wouldn't know how many anything sold, but we'd know how they sold relative to each other. And I think that would be very interesting. I mean, if we had a list right here where we could say, well, digitally Flashpoint outsold Fear Itself by X to 1 or whatever, that would be good. Or if we could just see, wow, Civil War is still selling some issues, that would be interesting too. But I'll see if I can get any of that, and it's kind of an uphill battle.
Well, I mean, what is the incentive for anybody to release that kind of information?
I would say awareness on how sales are doing and a certain amount of kind of legitimacy. It gets it out of the hands of the marketing people, and having a third party reporting on it gives it a less biased viewpoint than any PR release from the company saying, yeah, we sold great. What are they going to do? Come out with a press release saying our sales stunk? No. So I do think there's benefit in having a third party being able to report on these numbers.
Yeah. Once their sales don't stink. But up until that point, you know, there's the fear factor, right, of, boy, if I make this info available and the sales are not good, you know, then that would be bad. So, I mean, at some point, maybe, sure. Once they're doing good.
Yeah, but we'll see if that point ever happens. I mean, part of why we've got the numbers we've got from Diamond is because, I mean, this goes back to really Capital City, and before, you know, Diamond was the last man standing, there were multiple distributors. So it was able to tell retailers kind of how things are going and how things are selling within that without releasing the actual sales numbers. It's a little bit of a similar point, but more towards an end consumer of you want to see what's popular, you know? Success begets success is what it comes down to. And if they've got no way of reporting it other than, well, somebody who's got a venture interest in it seeming successful is saying it's successful, there's going to be the natural cynicism there.
Right.
So, I don't think digital sales are going to necessarily take away from the print to any major degree. Maybe they will.
There's some subset of people who are all juiced up to switch to digital, you know, and I don't doubt that that's going to happen. I don't know how big that number of people is. It's certainly some number of people are going to just say, hey, I'm out. I'm just going to get these things digital.
Oh, you totally.
Know, is
totally.
That going to, you know,
but I think that's 10%
of the people
noise.
Or, you know, it's basically it's about probably going to be similar to the number of people that just drift away anyway. It's just that instead of quitting comics, they're going to move digital. So that's a good thing in that respect, right? Because now you're getting them to not flee completely from comics. I mean, you know, they're just moving to digital instead of leaving. I can't see how that would be bad, right?
Oh, I don't think it'll be bad. And again, I don't think the sales that'll get drained out of print to digital is going to be noticeable, just like any influx for movies isn't really noticeable on the comics side. It's going to be a matter, though, of does the digital model really work, or is it a long-term game thing and more of a replacement on the trade side than on the comic side? Comics are still what's generating the revenue that sustains the content creation. We're not seeing many original trades. I mean, Superman Earth 1 is a notable exception. There's been the one or two Fables ones or whatever, but even that's few and far between. So I think for the main publishers, the ones capable of selling in that 50, 60,000 range, print's still going to be the way to go. I think for the smaller press, however, the ones near the bottom of the list, being able to get rid of the printing cost and hassle is going to make digital more worthwhile. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can get to a point where things that are released originally digitally are able to get into a print venue, or if there's even a need for that. Personally, I think there is a need for that, just because I think there are a lot of hardcore, old-school people like us that want the physical versions. If I'm going to pay for something, I want to have something tangible to own of it.
Well, I mean, it's going to be the difference between people who go out to the store and buy DVDs and Blu-ray discs, right? And you go every week, you know, you go into any Target, you go into Best Buy, you go into Walmart, and there's tons of DVDs and Blu-ray discs. They wouldn't be there if people were not buying them, right? They wouldn't be getting the shelf space. And then there are people who just go Netflix.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't care to have that. They just want to rent it. They watch it, you know, maybe they are even streaming it onto their TV over the internet from Netflix, which you can do, and that's fine, you know. But then there are the people who actually, you know, or they record it off of the TV and they watch it or something, you know. And then there are the people who like to have the, you know, box set of some TV show or whatever. And it's that same similar kind of a model where, you
totally.
Know, some people like a tangible item and other people say, who cares? I just want the disposable entertainment. And once I have consumed it one time, I don't ever need to deal with it again.
But let's look at the two takeaways from that comparison, which I think is a very apt one. The first is we're seeing a lot of blockbusters and local video stores shutting down. Okay. Because that Netflix thing is, frankly, an easier deal for a lot of people.
Right.
Okay, so the equivalent would be this could hurt comic shops. Not a big surprise there. I think, you know, every passing day almost inherently hurts comic shops just because of the way the market's changing. Okay. The other thing we haven't seen through either the Netflix model or even just the DVDs in general is we haven't seen the equivalent of a television show being produced directly for that market. Sure, we see direct-to-video movies, but not something that's a sustained, ongoing, continual kind of a project. At least none that I'm aware of. So, just like you could get a one-shot and do it straight to a you know, trade or, you know, direct-to-trade or whatever, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is things like the Superman Earth 1 are going to continue to be rarities. And as we move towards a model that's more like that Netflix kind of a thing with the digital or whatever, I still don't think we're going to see publishers being able to do long-term ongoings direct to that market because it's not generating the right kind of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And comics are in, I mean, you look at what's on the trade side and so much of that is compilations of existing comics or adaptions of foreign stuff, whatever. You look at the comics list, so much of this, even with the prevalence of miniseries, is ongoing titles near the top of the list. People want that continued story. Until they can find a business model that sustains the cost of content creation, and that gets harder and harder as these sales numbers go lower and lower. It used to be the cost of the 20 or so pages of comic stories was, amortized across the print run, a penny a copy or whatever. Now, not so much. You know, I'm curious how they're actually paying for the content on some of these lower selling ones. And I don't think digital is going to come in with a big enough revenue stream to supplant that or subsidize it for the most part.
Well,
certainly,
and as,
any additional revenue stream is good, though.
Right, and as you pointed out, I mean, the main difference between digital and print is going to be, unless digital can do something to defeat what you were talking about earlier, which is people are only going to consume the stuff when they are darn well and ready to, and you know, kind of meander out to pick something up. It's going to be problematic, and there's going to be a very long period where, you know, they're not going to know to make a decision. You know, are they making their money back? Are they getting, where's their 80% going to happen? You know, it's like right now you can pretty much count on you're getting 80% of your sales, you know, for the most part on a comic book the first week that it comes out. Well, that's not going to be the case. You know, are you going to get your 80% of sales in 3 months, in 6 months, in a year?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, the other part of that, though, is let's go with that day and date, you know, with the DC stuff, okay? That first week, the last week of August, you get the one copy of Justice League. You read it, you like it, okay? Then that next week, there are going to be, what, 12 or 13 DC titles coming out. Now, in a comic shop, somebody would go and say, wow, I'm excited about this. I'm going to go get all 12 or 13, buy them, take them home, read them, see what I like, see what I don't like. In a digital realm, are you really going to buy all 12 or 13 and then start reading? No, you're going to pick the one you think you're going to like the most. You're going to buy that. You're going to read that. If you like that, then you might look for the second one you think you're going to like the most, buy that, read that. At some point, you're going to hit a point saying, wow, this just totally sucked. I didn't like it at all. At which point, maybe you'll continue and hope you like another one better, or you may just stop. So the barriers to continued sales become more immediate, I think, on the digital side because of the convenience of buying, whereas that's not the case on the print side. So I think we're going to have just a fundamentally different sales curve there. And like you said, when do they make enough money out of an issue, you know, for it to have paid for itself? And I think it's going to be a much longer term venue. Just like we're seeing sales that are frequently a tenth or lower on the trade side than the corresponding component issues on the monthly side, I expect we're going to see much, much lower but longer sales digitally, or at least we would if we saw the numbers. And I'm going to keep pushing to see what I can get, but, you know, it's an uphill battle.
Right. And, you know, that fair point. And, you know, it's really going to be a challenge as we go forward with this in force. And the shift happens to digital, you know, the validity of the sales channel in the shops, you know, we'll have to keep reassessing that. But, you know, it's as more and more people, it seems like, are going digital. And if they are able to attach themselves, and I say attach themselves to, you know, very specifically, but if they're able to somehow capture this new market of people who, for some reason, they're able to do something really cool with marketing so that somebody would rather read a comic book than play Angry Birds, you know, that would be good, right? I would love to see that happen. And, you know, that's going to be something that we'll have to see how that becomes a viable way of delivering comics material in the future.
Where I work, the way Angry Birds kind of progressed, as best I recall it and know it, one person at the office had it, liked it, said, hey, you've got to go play this. Another one's, they're like sitting right next to them, seeing it on the phone. Oh, they're on their phone. They're downloading it. Suddenly they're playing it and it goes out like a virus. Okay. And it's literally a contact kind of a thing. In the most part, people aren't just randomly stumbling across it. Somebody else said, I've played this. I like it. You should play it. Oh, and then they continue the process. If the publishers can get those of us that are entrenched in comics already, that are knowledgeable about them and interested and passionate about them, and use us as kind of that patient zero, that's in their interests. You know, I really think there's something to be said for getting those of us in the print audience to stay in print but to also have access to that digital for the sales initiative aspect. I just see us as the gateway to that audience that probably isn't going to be taken advantage of.
Well, you have one extra element there, as I think of that, is there is not a social stigma attached with playing Angry Birds on your phone, whereas a lot of people are still very reluctant to reveal that they read comic books.
I think that's gone away a lot, at least where I'm at.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe where you're at. I don't think it's gone away quite in general yet in society in the United States. So
I think in this summer of movies with Captain America, Green Lantern, Thor, X-Men First Class, you know, all these things, that there's an awareness and acceptance of these properties that it gives certain inroads that weren't there a year or 2 years ago, even with those movies back then. So I don't think it's as uphill of a battle as it may seem. I will certainly concede that the place I'm at where I work is an anomaly. We've actually got that cover image from Justice League 7 up on one wall, where it's the two of the, you know what I mean, with the Core 7 and everybody else in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, we've got the cover of Uncanny X-Force number 1 down the hall. We've got comic covers, you know, posters up all around the place. So at least where I'm at, it would not be seen as a social stigma to be reading comics, and it wouldn't take much to kind of spark a potential wildfire of readers there if there was something that people was contagious. You know, and the question is, how many of these new DC 2.0 titles are going to be that way? You know, I recommended Blackest Night to a couple of people. They've read it. They've loved it. You know, but if they'd read it and said, well, it was okay, that's not a contagious property. You know, it's got to be something that's buzz-worthy. It's got to be accessible. And that's going to be where the DC 2.0 lineup stands or fails. Mm-hmm. Right now, looking at these sales, most of these are not only not buzz-worthy, they're not contagious. They are easy to shake these viruses, if you will. You know, the fact sales just continue to go down. I mean, we've got, you know, X-Men Legacy down at 46,000-ish. X-Men proper itself right around that same area. Uncanny X-Men up around 53,716. X-Men used to be one of the big franchises. It's still not bad. It's still, you know, doing all right. But they just don't have the audience in print. I don't think they're going to find it digitally either. But we'll see. So anything else?
I think that does it for me.
Cool. Next month's episode may be a little late because the numbers are going to come out right around the time I'm heading off to Comic-Con, so we'll probably get these. If we can get it before, great. Odds are it'll be afterwards, though. Just so everybody knows when to expect that episode. So I think that does it, then.
But even in absence of hearing our charming voices, you'll be able to read John's article on comicbookresources.com, because that'll go up. You know, around when it normally does, right?
I sure hope so. A lot of that's going to depend when these numbers get released, when I get them crunched. It's quite possible I may spend the drive out to San Diego writing that article. But, you know, we'll see. But please, read those articles over there. Send me feedback. If you all have questions and things you want to know about on these sales, let us know. Actually, for that matter, one of the things we should talk about real quick is somebody was asking about incentive covers and how those worked on the forum, specifically in reference to the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 160, where they had heard that their store was ordering two of a 1 in 400 variant because they had two readers that wanted them and wanted to know how on earth that worked. I have not been able to find any sign of a 1 in 400 variant. I found a 1 in 100 and a 1 in 200. The way these work is you have to order that many copies of the regular issue in order to qualify to be able to get the variant copy. So in this case, for that regular comic, which is polybagged, if you ordered 200 copies, you would be able to get one of the 1 in 200 Quesada sketch variant, two of the Quesada variants that are the 1 in 100, and I'd have to do the math, but divide it by 30, go to the lower integer, and that many of the Kaluta variants. To get the spoiler cover by Bagley, you needed, the retailer needed to order 175% of their orders for Ultimate Comics 156. And then they could order as many of that variant as they wanted. So it all comes down to how they qualify. There's no ripping off of covers. There's no sending back of anything. It's simply, do you get enough copies to make it worth it or not? So any store that was planning on buying 29 of the regular copy of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 160, well, hell, order the additional copy. Get then be able to order the Kaluta variant for the 1 in 30, so you've got that to sell. That kind of makes sense. If you're ordering only, say, 15, do you want to order another 15 to get the 30? Probably not. The store, I forget who it was on the forum, and I apologize for that, was saying they thought the store was only selling around 40 copies of Ultimate Spider-Man, and they thought it was going to order like 800 or something. Well, one, probably not that many. Probably if they were ordering two of the Quesada sketch variant, that would only be 400 copies. Hopefully they're not even doing that. That's 10 times what they sounds like they can sell.
Well, it depends on how much money, I guess, the person who wants that variant is willing to cough up for it. I mean, if someone's saying, okay, I'll give you, you know, $150 for this, you know, comic, it might even at that price might not make sense to order, you know, a couple of hundred $399 books that they're probably paying $2 a piece for that they're going to have to sit on. You know, it all comes into dollars and cents, right? You know, it's like, how much money does the store have to pay for those extra copies? And is the money that they're going to make selling that 1 in 100 or 1 in 50 or whatever the variant is, you know, do they think they can make their money back so that they're not losing money and subsequently putting themselves in risk of going out of business? You know, it's all how much can they sell that for? And
I think normally when they do that math, they do it based on how much they're paying for those regular copies, not how much they would sell them for. So it also depends how big of a store it is. If it's a small store, they may only be getting a 35% discount through Diamond. I mean, Bob and I are getting a better discount through that through Discount Comic Book Service, DCBS, because they've got the volume to be getting that better discount. But the best discount they're going to get is still going to be shy of 60%. I think it's going to be either 57.5, maybe 59.5. I'd have to go look it up. And that's one of the smart things DC's doing with the relaunch is they're giving a higher percentage, I think a 75% discount in some cases, to mitigate the risk. But the store is going to say, if I've got to order 200 of these regular issues at $399 to get this one copy that they've still got to pay another, you know, $399 minus discount for of the Quesada sketch variant, they're going to say, okay, I'm having to order X copies extra, multiply that out, that's how much they need to be making. I mean, does this inflate sales? Yes. That's the whole point of these incentive covers, to inflate sales.
Yeah, if they weren't getting extra sales, I mean, if it was just, I'm going to pay an artist to produce a new image for a variant cover, and all I'm going to sell is, you know, like let's say it's the 1 in 30 copy. You know, if a store is going to buy 100 copies of the comic book, then they're going to be able to buy three of these 1 in 30 Kaluta covers. You know, it's like if all I thought I was going to get out of it as the publisher was selling an extra three copies of this comic book, it certainly would not make any sense for me to be producing that variant cover to get that tiny an amount of additional sales. So they've got to be counting on, you know, stores bumping up their numbers by 10, 20, you know, whatever number of copies to qualify for a threshold so that they can get that variant. You know, they're counting on if they do a 1 in 100 variant, that if a store was going to buy 80 or 85 copies anyway, that they might bump their sales up. They might say, okay, you know what, I'll buy an extra 15 copies to get the 1 in 100. But if a store was only going to think they can sell 30, they probably would not buy 70 extra copies to get it. That's just, you know, there's some threshold in there where a store's maybe likely to say, well, I'll just get X number of extra copies in order to qualify for that incentive.
Well, and that's part of why when you see multiple incentive covers for one, the ratios are usually not multiples of each other. They're usually pretty shrewd on how they do this. It'll be like a 1 in 10, a 1 in, 25, or the number such that you start hitting multiple, well, if I just get another copy or two, I can get this other variant. But, well, at that point, if I just get another copy or two, I can get this other variant. You know, they do it like all prime numbers or something ridiculous. I mean, that's a bad example, but you know what I mean. It's, again, the 30 versus the 100. You know, it's not 25 and 100. Because if you're getting the 30, well, the 30 is a break-off point, 60, then 90. Once you're at 90, you're not that far from 100. You know, and that's how they kind of work that stuff out. They're, again, trying to goose the sales as much as they can. And that makes sense to do. I think those are bad profits because they're there for the wrong reasons and are not sustainable. Again, as we're seeing, top 10, everyone had these kinds of multiple cover gimmicks and stuff like that, and we still had low sales. And this was, again, the third lowest month we've seen in the Final Order era. But that's kind of how things work if you've got with variant covers and incentive covers. If you've got questions along those lines, please let us know. We're happy to cover these kinds of things in these episodes.
Yeah, and explicitly, you know, the difference between a variant cover and an incentive cover is a lot of times they might just do a 50-50 variant, or they might do 35, 33-33, or some kind of normal thing, and you don't need to order a certain threshold to be able to buy the incentive cover. You know, like Avatar and Dynamite and Zenoscope. A lot of these companies do variant covers on every issue where, you know, there's like three different covers. They might have an incentive cover on top of the variant cover, but a variant cover is just, if I order six copies and there's a 50-50 variant, they're going to give me three of the one cover and three of the other cover. But if they have a 1 in 10 incentive, if I ordered 10 copies, I'd get 5 of cover A, 5 of cover B, and I'd have the option of buying that 1 in 10 one also, right? So, you know, there is an explicit difference between a variant cover and an incentive cover, also sometimes called a chase cover.
I also tend to differentiate between alternate covers and variant covers. The alternate is the kind of thing that's, you know, the 50-50 or whatever. Differentiated from the variant where you could actually order them separately.
Right.
Because I think those have different sales curves. But again, the key one is the retailer incentive cover, which is the one they've got to jump through hoops to get. Those are the ones that tend to goose the sales the most. With either the alternate or the variant, in those cases, it really comes down to the art on those covers. Because there are going to be some, like I know with Infinite Crisis, I got both of every cover because Jim Lee, George Perez, I loved them both. Then you go to Final Crisis, where it was the Sliver cover and the one that actually had full art. Those Sliver covers did not do well.
Yeah, you'd see like big piles of them left at the store, and that one was not separately orderable. That was a 50-50. So half the covers a store got were the full art, and then the half were the stripe down the middle of art. And boy, 2 weeks after that issue came out, any comic shop I'd go into, there would be issues of Final Crisis, and it would all be those striped down the middle covers. There wouldn't be any of the full art covers left.
I'm really curious when we're going to see kind of the trade dress for the new DC lineup, and if they're doing anything kind of different, kind of like, you know, how the Ultimate line stands out.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to do anything along those lines for the new titles or not, how well that gets received if they do.
I hope someone at DC, maybe they'll hire somebody new, but if they can do something other than just sticking a banner along the top of things, that's a really weak trade. Like, they're doing it in Flashpoint. This Green Lantern movie thing's really getting on my nerves. Can they do something to distinguish their line that's got some visually distinctive aspect, but is a little more elegant than just slapping a banner along the top of the comic book cover?
Yeah. Well, again, there have been publishers that have done that. Broadway, I think it was, did that pretty well with the black border, and it made their stuff kind of instantly recognizable on the rack. It gives it a brand awareness, a brand identity, and that's something that DC has an opportunity with their new lineup to really kind of reestablish themselves and go from being really the underdog in terms of the top 300 sales behind Marvel to, you know, an even player with them. I'd like to see after September it being even odds as to is it Marvel or DC who's got the lion's share of the sales. Don't really expect that to happen, but I'd love it. I think it's just better for everybody.
In comic shops, I really don't see that happening, unfortunately. I think DC's big push is going to be what they can generate outside of the traditional comic shop channel.
Well, be interesting to find out in the coming months. Should make for a good end of the year for these episodes.
Yep, we will find out.
So anything else, or does that finally do it? I think that does it.
I think that finally does it.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during a month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.